Like many of you, I suppose, I have my morning routine that I follow on most work days. I feed the dog after I get up, have my cup of coffee, do the New York Times crossword puzzle, and hopefully go for a nice long walk. I do this to clear my mind and mentally prepare myself for the day. I get dressed. I drive downtown to that beautiful new courthouse. Maybe I'll have another cup of coffee. And then I put on my black robe, step into my courtroom, and start my day. As you've heard, I am a family law judge, and I know what awaits me when I take the bench. On my busiest days, I may hear up to 20 cases. I will interact with dozens of people. Some have attorneys. Most, maybe up to 80%, do not. This much I know for sure. None of those people want to be there. They are going through some of the most difficult and challenging times in their lives. When they come before me, they display the full range of human emotions. Many are angry, frustrated, scared, anxious, or in deep pain. Some are shell-shocked. Some are quietly resigned to the legal process. Most, many, are suspicious of it. Some have come with the best of intentions. Some have come to exact revenge on the person sitting across from them. And most, I think, just want to be done with the whole thing. I would say most people that I encounter conduct themselves calmly and appropriately for a courtroom. But almost every day, there are those who yell at me, interrupt me. Some have, called me terrible names or otherwise disrespected me and by extension the court. Those who have attorneys have learned to sit quietly and respectfully and until that it's their turn to speak. Those who do not have attorneys, particularly if it is their first time in court, struggle to understand why they have to go through this process and often cannot grasp the purpose and logic of the procedures and the rules that they're required to follow. They ask me for advice. What should I do? What do I need to do? And I explain with regret that I can't help them. I'm not permitted to give them advice according to the codes of conduct that govern my conduct every day. If all goes well, the hearings are peaceful and efficient. I can render as many as 15 decisions in the space of a 2.5-hour calendar on such questions as, who gets custody of the children? How is the property to be divided? How much child support is appropriate? And how I can protect someone from domestic violence? Some people leave satisfied. Some leave disappointed. Many leave feeling a little of both, having received some but not all of the relief they are requesting. There are days when things don't go so well. Days when my deputy will have to escort someone out of the courtroom for inappropriate conduct. There have been days when parties have left in handcuffs. There are many, many days when parties have left in tears. On much rarer occasions, a few leave smiling. When I go home each evening, I am mentally exhausted. And every single night, I go to bed with the same questions on my mind. Did I do good today? Did I do right? Did I make any kind of a difference in anybody's life? I know I likely won't get the answers to those questions, but I still get up the next day and repeat the same process and go home exhausted again with no more answers than I had the day before. Sounds like a fun job, huh? Well, I'm here to tell you that it's an amazing job. Being a judge is an honor. And I know it is the truest and highest calling of my legal profession, of my life as a legal professional. I'd like to share with you today what it is that drives me to go through that routine every day and get up the next day to do the work of justice, even though almost every day I'm drained of my mental and sometimes emotional resources. And in many cases, I never find out how things ultimately turn out, or whether I've made any kind of a positive impact on the lives of the people who come before me. The thing that keeps me going, in a word, is faith. A number of you might be familiar with the speech Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave on the steps of the state capitol in Montgomery, Alabama, after the successful completion of the Selma March in 1965. You might know it as the How Long, Not Long speech. The thrust of the speech was, how long will we need to wait for racial justice to take hold? Dr. King concluded the most famous part of the speech with these words. How long? He asked. Not long, because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. That last line is well known. But did you know that Dr. King was actually paraphrasing Dr. Theodore Parker, a 19th century Unitarian minister and abolitionist, no relation, by the way, as far as we know? It's worth looking at Dr. Parker's actual words because they give a bit more context to what I want to talk to you about today. Parker said, quote, I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. And from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice. In researching my topic for today, my attention was drawn to an essay about these words by a writer named Michael Denzel Smith, who made an interesting point. The lesson drawn from King's more succinct and definitive version is that one may be confident that the moral universe bends inevitably towards justice. But Parker's more nuanced version expresses greater uncertainty in the course of the moral universe. Because, as he said, my eye reaches but little ways. He was unable to calculate the curve of the universe, of the moral universe, and complete the figure by experience of sight. In other words, he was unable to predict the course of the moral universe by his own personal experience. For that reason, as Michael Smith observes, Parker was left to divine it by conscience. And that is what makes him more sure of the ultimate outcome, that justice will surely prevail. Says Mr. Smith, Parker's version reveals that it is, quote, his very uncertainty about the moral universe that makes his strong faith a necessity. For Parker, there is no guarantee that he sees clearly of the moral universe taking the course he wishes. It is only through his own conscience and thereby his own actions that follow his conscience that he can be assured justice will be achieved. I believe that what inspired Dr. Parker to get up every morning and go about his work in the ministry and with abolitionism, even though he could not know with certainty the end result, and in fact, he did not live to see the end of slavery. It's the same thing that prompts me to get up every day and go through my routine and take the bench and do what I do, even though in most cases I will never know if I have made any positive difference in the lives of the families with whom I interact. It is faith. In my case, it is first faith in a system of laws that, while certainly flawed, is nonetheless fundamentally sound. Second, it is faith in my own abilities and my own judgment to apply those laws appropriately to the facts, as proven, but always, and especially in family court, in a manner that is deeply informed by a deeply ingrained sense of fairness, equity, and compassion. And third, it is faith in that more intangible, unknowable spirit of love that I believe is within all of us and that enables us to act not just in our own self-interest, but for the good of others. Dr. Parker could not complete the figure of the moral universe by sight of personal experience. I, too, cannot see but little ways. I cannot say with certainty that what I do in my little courtroom in my little corner of the country will in the long run result in a more just world. I make decisions based on the facts before me on that day. I cannot always know if my rulings will have their intended effect of bringing predictability and order to a chaotic situation, of bringing true peace of mind to the abused, or creating a path forward for a broken family. so the children can grow up feeling loved, safe, and secure despite their parents' differences. But unlike Dr. Parker, despite these uncertainties, I can act according to my training, my education, and my conscience. I can choose to have faith that my actions can and will over time bend the course of human history ever so slightly toward a more just society based on mutual respect, tolerance, compassion, and peaceful coexistence. I can choose, in other words, to take the long view. Indeed, I must choose to take the long view, and I must continue to have faith. That's because there are, in fact, times when I do know how things have worked out in some of my cases. Usually that is because the same families appear before me again, and sometimes again, and again, and again. That is a pretty good sign that my efforts to steer that couple on a path towards peaceful cooperation and co-parenting have not yet borne fruit. But that's the thing about faith. If I just gave up because some parties stubbornly insist on continuing to be nasty to each other, I couldn't do this job. My colleagues couldn't do their jobs. And then where would we be? Really, could any of us do our jobs or go about our daily lives if, when faced with bitter disappointments, we just choose to not try anymore? Where would our kids be if we simply gave up on them after they made a couple of bad choices? Where would race relations be if we had just given up after Dred Scott, Plessy versus Ferguson, or Emmett Till? Where would the environment be if we had just written off the gray whales because of hunting, or eagles and condors and pelicans because of DDT? When you think about it, we are all creatures of faith. We face setbacks and disappointments, yet we keep going in any way we can because of the belief that we are working toward a better day, a happier outcome, a brighter future. And hopefully we are buoyed in these efforts by the occasional affirmation, the little and sometimes big successes that result from our efforts. In my business, from time to time, I see things that reassure me the system can and does work the way it is supposed to. And sometimes what I do has direct positive impacts. For example, I've received letters thanking me for the manner in which I have conducted my hearings. One gentleman thanked me for restoring his faith in the justice system. And by the way, he just happened to be an observer in my court on a day when we had a very, very awful domestic violence case involving children. And I was stunned and so pleased to receive his letter because he said, this is what average people don't understand about the justice system. So that was a lovely thing to receive. And just the other day, I had a case where the parties were particularly acrimonious towards each other and had been for years. They had a teenager who, after all the years of his parents fighting, was struggling in school and had gotten in trouble with the law. It was a very difficult hearing, and I had to be very honest and blunt with the parties about the harsh consequences of their actions on their child. But the very next case on my calendar was a young couple with a 2-year-old. Who, having seen in the prior case where their lives were headed if they did not change course, started their hearing before me in tears, promising they would do better by their child than the couple they had just seen. It is outcomes like that that keep me going and that restore and strengthen my faith. I have over 1,000 cases assigned to me. I've never done a scientific study, but I would say that less than 10 or 15% of the active cases involve parties that I would call frequent flyers or frequent filers. People who cannot let go of their animosity and hurt and cannot put down the fight. I can see some families 2-3 times a month. I would like to think, however, that that means that in 85 to 90% of the active cases on my docket, people have come in, they've gotten the orders that they need, and then they've gotten on with their lives. Can I know that for certain? No, I can't. But I can divine it by conscience. I can divine that in most cases, the system worked the way it was supposed to. Mine certainly is not the only career that demands hefty doses of faith to get through the day. Among other vocations, teaching, medicine, science, the military, law enforcement, and yes, marriage and parenting also exact every measure of devotion and commitment of those who enter into them, with no guarantee that things will turn out as hoped. But people of faith and goodwill must never not do what they are drawn to doing, what they believe they are called to do, because there are no guarantees. They must never not strive to do the right thing because they may not see the end result they want, or because maybe they won't achieve every goal they are working towards. I've shared with you the nagging questions and doubts that I take to bed with me every night. I wonder, is there something that keeps you up at night? Are you experiencing some crisis of faith? Maybe it's the moral and political upheavals that we are bombarded with every day on the news. Or maybe you're facing challenges with your own career or with your families. Whatever it may be, I offer to you these words of encouragement. If all you can do on any given day is show up, then show up. Just show up and do whatever it is that you do, but do it with integrity and commitment and with the knowledge that your actions may have ripple effects you cannot discern with your own eyes. The act of showing up is itself a reaffirmation of your faith in your values and in the achievability of your goals and dreams, even if at the end of any given day you don't think you have anything tangible to show for it. The act of showing up is taking a stand. Today I'm going to be the best judge I can be. Today I'm going to be the best parent I can be. Today I'm going to be the best citizen I can be. Today I am going to be the best neighbor I can be. My wonderful husband, Michael Scott, remembered a poem from some time in his past, and I think it is worth sharing here. It is called Stubborn Ounces by Benaro W. Overstreet. Stubborn Ounces, subtitled, To One Who Doubts the Worth of Doing Anything If You Can't Do Everything. You say the little efforts that I make will do no good. They will never prevail to tip the hovering scale where justice hangs in the balance. I don't think I ever thought they would. But I am prejudiced beyond debate in favor of my right to choose which side shall feel the stubborn ounces of my weight. I am prejudiced beyond debate in favor of my right to choose which side shall feel the stubborn ounces of my weight. When I take the bench every day, I know I may not move mountains. But I can take the few stubborn ounces of my weight and apply them so that the arc of the moral universe bends just a little bit more towards equity and fairness and compassion. And I do so with faith that some families in our community may be just a little bit better off than the day before. May it be so. Blessed be.